Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1991 with a release date of Friday, December 25th, 2015 to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. A California amateur faces a $25,000 fine from the FCC. Field day is coming. Yes, winter field day. A DXer surprises the world from North Korea. And a survey says older contesters are still going strong. All this and more in Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1991 coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's first independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now reporting from Mississippi, here is Don Wilbanks, AE5DW.
We open this week's newscast with the story of a California radio amateur who's just learned the high price of interference and other inappropriate transmissions on the bands. Amateur Radio Newsline's Jim Dameron, NATMW.
In what ends a protracted FCC case against a ham for intentional interference, a California radio operator faces a fine of as much as $25,000. William F. Crowell, W6WBJ, formerly licensed as N6AYJ, had received warnings from the agency's Enforcement Bureau about intentional radio interference as early as 2000. The Diamond Springs, California ham, whose license expired in 2007, was nonetheless permitted to continue operating after the FCC in 2008 designated his license renewal application as pending and subject to a hearing. The FCC had flagged that renewal application following numerous earlier complaints that he had been interfering with other amateurs, interrupting communications, playing music, and transmitting obscenities. The latest action by the FCC came this past December 18th, with the release of its Notice of Apparent Liability for Forfeiture. The notice from the Office of FCC San Francisco District Director David K. Hartshorn was spurred by reports from the Western Amateur Radio Friendship Association, whose members claimed direct interference from Crowell during their net in August. An investigation by the Enforcement Bureau followed, and it details its findings in the notice. The FCC notice says in part that Crowell repeatedly interrupted other amateurs using noises, recordings, and music, in addition to talking over amateurs affiliated with the WARFA net, so as not to allow them to transmit on the frequency. His transmissions and recordings included racial, ethnic, and sexual slurs and epithets. The FCC Enforcement Bureau, which was monitoring the transmissions, noted, too, that the interference did not stop until it had shut the net down. The FCC says Crowell acknowledged operating on 3908 kilohertz on most nights and that he was on the air the evening of August 27th when the interference was reported. He has been given 30 days from the release of the notice to pay the forfeiture or to file in writing seeking reduction or cancellation of the proposed penalty. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jim Dameron, NATMW in Charleston, West Virginia.
It looks like the giving spirit of the holiday season is going to last quite a bit longer, thanks to a new fund known as Hams with Hearts. The fund is being launched by the International DX Association with a starting contribution from the fund's founder, Zoro Miyazawa, JH1AJT. Hams with Hearts aims to provide funding to humanitarian projects undertaken by DX expedition teams and expects to begin providing these grants in just a few weeks, as early as mid-January. The expeditioners who apply for the grants are being asked to provide a detailed and clear plan of what project they plan to undertake and must substantiate the benefits the projects will create for the local population. But the applicants must meet certain standards. Projects that simply leave behind radio equipment, teach amateur licensing classes, or create a video will not qualify. Projects that provide first aid equipment, water purification, and medical supplies, as well as educational materials and clothing, are more suited for grants from Hams with Hearts. Releasing its announcement this month, Indexa cautioned that startup will be gradual. The announcement said, quote, "In the early years of this fund, it's likely that grants will be modest. We therefore will be seeking low-cost but high-impact projects," end quote. The announcement also said, "With this new fund, we hope to benefit humanity and enhance the image of amateur radio around the world." More details can be found at www.indexa.org, and that's I-N-D-E-X-A.O-R-G. The idea of participating in Field Day next month might just leave you cold, but that's the whole point. Winter Field Day is coming, and it'll be here the last full weekend in January. Amateur Radio Newsline's Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, talked to organizers of this alternative annual event.
Just imagine if you had a big ice storm up there and you lost power and regular communications. How many times have cell phones gone out for one reason or another? And the local authorities a lot of times come to amateur radio operators asking to provide communications. So if they do, what can you provide them? Are you ready for it?
Stop and think about what Tom Phelps, WD8MBE, just said.
Do you have a go kit that's set up or ready for winter conditions?
Every June, thousands of amateur radio operators participate in the ARRL Field Day. 24 hours when hams prove they can establish contacts around the country and around the world while they deal with challenges that can include storms, bugs, heat, and humidity. How about a field day in the dead of winter?
It's like the June field day. We have individuals operating by themselves. We have clubs that go out as a club and do that. Emergency situations don't happen just during the summer months when it's nice. It can happen right in the middle of winter.
Phelps says operating in the winter can present a new set of challenges, like when he joined some friends at a cabin with only generator power.
He decided to switch his gas generator over to propane to try and conserve fuel and the generator run quieter. Well, we come to find out propane, once it gets cold enough, it does not change into a vapor from the liquid stage. And so our generator kept shutting down. Hams that operate off battery banks, they have to be very careful because the cold tends to drain the power quicker from a battery. We set up a butternut in good weather and had great SWR. But when we went there last January and checked the SWR, we had to retune the antenna because the snow cover had changed the SWR on the antenna. We've had folks that also have set up outside and the weather's just gotten so bad they've had to move indoors. We have clubs operating from their club stations. We have clubs operating from pavilions. There's one guy that goes up to a fire tower and sets up. He actually drives his snowmobile up there to set up. The main goal is, what can you provide as far as communications in a winter weather conditions if emergency communications is needed? It's a challenge all the way around.
Winter Field Day 2016 will take place on January 30th for 24 hours starting at 1700 UTC. If Winter Field Day sounds like an interesting challenge, you can visit their webpage at www.winterfieldday.com. That's all one word, winterfieldday.com. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY.
The ham radio community mourns the death of George Marty, W5GLJ, a pioneer in the manufacture and deployment of remote pickup broadcast technology. He became a silent key on December 13th. Marty's work not only enabled radio stations to originate broadcasts away from the studio, but succeeded in getting the FCC to authorize its use. An early Marty remote pickup unit of his is on display at the Smithsonian's National Museum of American History. As the owner of a local radio station, Marty developed the first remote pickup unit to enable the broadcasting of local high school sports back to the radio studio without having to rely on phone lines. A veteran of the Marines and a man of varied interest, he had been licensed as a ham since his early teens. He later founded Marty Electronics, which he sold in 1994. George Marty was 95 and was the mayor of Cleburne, Texas, where he died. Participants in the CQ Worldwide contest may be young at heart, but according to recently released survey results, they're older than you may think. Preliminary survey results posted by the contest committee revealed that young competitors were far outnumbered by much older amateurs. Doug Zweibel, KR2Q, who prepared the analysis, reported, quote, "This is especially true when we look at the age distribution in North America. There's very little survey participation in North America from those under 40 years of age. More than 900 of the nearly 1,500 respondents from North America were at least 60 years old," end quote. The survey drew 5,117 responses from around the world, with the largest number, 2,600, from Europe. The good news for younger hams comes from Europe, however. CQ said the age curve showed participants there to be about 10 years younger. The other good news comes from fans of CW. Without exception, Morse code remains the most popular operating mode, especially among contesters age 40 or older. It's time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the WR9 ARC repeater of the Riverland Amateur Radio Club in La Crosse, Wisconsin, on Sundays. Fighting some of the worst HF conditions in recent days, a Polish DXer has put North Korea back on the air. Amateur Radio Newsline's Jeremy Boot, G4NJH, has the details.
It was a triumph of history, meteorology, international politics, and most especially radio, when DXer Dom Gzeeb 3Z9DX fired up his rig and began making the first of what was to become a few hundred QSOs from North Korea. beginning on the 20th of December at 0000 UTC. Working both 20 metres and 15 metres SSB as P5-3Z9DX, his transmissions put that nation back on the amateur airwaves for the first time since 2002. It was by most accounts a surprise. The Polish radio amateur had been meeting North Korean officials, working out the details for next year's planned operation from what is the world's most wanted DXCC entity. Pileups of anxious amateurs rallied around his call, and a few hundred stations eagerly jumped in and made contact. North Korea has been off the ban since the conclusion of the 2001-2002 operation by 4L4FN. Whilst it caught the rest of the world quite unexpectedly, North Korean officials were of course privy to what was going on. Xeeb took to the bands to demonstrate for them what it would be like in February 2016 during his longer, hoped-for operation there. The sun, it turns out, proved to be the biggest obstacle in play, as a huge coronal mass ejection raised the A index to 66 and the K index to 6, producing some of the worst HF conditions recently. By the dawn of Monday the 21st of December, conditions had grown less favourable. Xeeb is now working out the remaining logistics in preparation for February, when hopefully the sun will cooperate too. In the meanwhile, stations were being advised to keep contact short out of courtesy to other operators. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jeremy Bucci, 4NJH, in Nottingham in the UK.
In the latest news reports, Xeeb was headed back to Poland for Christmas and to make preparations to return to Korea for his 2016 DX adventure. Friday, January 1st, doesn't just mark New Year's Day. In Ireland, it's also 80 Meters Counties Contest Day for radio amateurs. The wide-ranging contest has both fixed stations and portable sections with SSB only or mixed modes. The competition runs from 1400 to 1700 UTC using 32 EI and GI counties as multipliers. Good news for operators who enjoy CW. To encourage more CW in the mixed mode sections, organizers are giving a bonus of 1,000 points to any entry that includes at least 10 valid QSOs done in CW with an EI or GI station. The contest is also set 3522 kilohertz as its suggested center of activity for CW. May the best contesters win. It's still more than a year away, but researchers at the Hume Center for National Security and Technology are very excited about the 2017 launch of an amateur radio transponder with a special disaster mission. The geosynchronous satellite amateur radio payload is being dispatched to assist in emergency communications, according to the center's director of research, Bob McGuire, in 4HY. McGuire described the ambitious goals for the payload by saying, quote, "It will allow rapid deployment to disaster areas and support long-haul communications for first responders," end quote. It would become the first amateur payload in a geosynchronous orbit. The Hume Center has been working with the Federal Emergency Management Agency officials on the project. We expect to hear more over the next year as efforts go forward. The ARRL's Alaska section welcomes its new section manager, Ray Hollenbeck, KL7IL of Wasilla, Alaska, who's been appointed to succeed Jim Larson, AL7FS. Hollenbeck, who begins his term January 1st, has been an ARRL emergency coordinator for almost 7 years. Larson, who's from Anchorage, has served as section manager for the past 8 years and decided not to seek another term. Hollenbeck was appointed by ARRL Manager of Field Services and Radio Sport, Dave Patton, NN1N, in consultation with Northwestern Division Director Jim Pace, K7CEX, and Larson. Larson, who will complete his fourth term as Alaska's section manager at year's end, decided not to run for another term after serving for the past 8 years. In one school in a remote Alaskan Eskimo village, ham radio was graduated with honors. With support from the local district, the Pilot Station School recently made amateur radio an integral part of its curriculum. The Pilot Station School Radio Club, WL7CXM, is now moving from simply being an after-school program to a serious during-school offering. The club was created by fifth-grade teacher Don Gallen, KL7DG, with a variety of goals: to teach geography, to help students command of the standard English language, to give them confidence by expressing themselves on a microphone, and also to help them read and be more social. Gallen said, quote, "Many of the kids have trouble imagining the world beyond our region or Alaska as a whole. They're excited to pull down the globe off the shelf and find the places we're talking or listening to. This has helped them in social studies as they're getting their worldview expanded by radio," end quote. The club, which began as an informal after-school activity, is now a district-sanctioned educational program. The club has already participated in the school club roundup, where it achieved its Worked All States award by landing its 50th contact, an amateur in Oklahoma. Gallen said his next goal is to set up a team to work with the Amateur Radio Emergency Service. That would put Alaska's youngest amateurs not just in the classroom itself, but unquestionably at the head of the class. NDX, Henrik OZ6TL is active as E51TLA from Rarotonga Island through January 9th. He's working holiday style on the HF band, usually mainly CW and RTTY on 30 and 20 meters. QSL via his home call sign or logbook of the world. Hardy, DL7LL, is also active on Rarotonga Island. He's working as E51LLA through December 28th. He did not indicate what bands or modes, however, but just be listening. QSL via DL7LL. Jean-Pierre, F6ITD, will be active as FG-F6ITD from Guadeloupe and two of its islands between January 20th and March 28th. These islands include Basse-Terre de Chaise, the main island, between January 20th and February 2nd, and La Dizarrad Island between March 3rd and the 8th. He'll work all HF bands, both on SSB and in digital modes. Listen for the call sign TO6D. QSL via his home call sign, direct or logbook of the world. And Bill, K9HZ, is working as J68HZ from his villa at La Brelette Bay, Castres, St. Lucia, through January 3rd, with activity mostly on 160 through 2 meters using CW, SSB, and RTTY. He'll emphasize 160 and 80 meters on all modes. QSL via his home call sign, although he will also use Logbook of the World Club Log and EQSL. And one final sad note. Longtime Newsline listeners will remember the voice of Mert Garlick in 6AWE. We're saddened to report that Mert became a silent key Wednesday, December 23rd. Mert was an engineer with Fox Television in Los Angeles from 1966 until his retirement in 2003. He worked with the late Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, at Fox 11. Over the years, he did every job a broadcast engineer could perform at a television station, from manning the transmitter atop Mount Wilson, to microwaving signals back from the scene of a breaking news story, to covering the annual Tournament of Roses parade in Pasadena. Mert did it all, and then some. The funeral will be held December 30th in Long Beach, California, and he'll be buried alongside his late wife in Wyoming. Sadly, she just passed 4 months ago. He's survived by three children, two of which are also hams. Mert Garlick, N6AWE, was 75. With thanks to Allen Labs, the ARRL, CQ Magazine, DX.net, Hap Holly and the Rain Report, the Hindustan Times, Irish Radio Transmitter Society, Indexa, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, Southgate Amateur Radio News, Twit TV, Weather.com, and you, our listeners, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website, located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. For now, with Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team worldwide, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW, in Picayune, Mississippi, wishing you the merriest of Christmases and the happiest of holidays. 73. And as always, we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2015. All rights are reserved.